second. I'll introduce you and then...
Log Talk Radio.
Yeah, I'll introduce you and give you a hit that we'll be talking. Hey, what an interesting show tonight. A lot of guests tonight, more than usual. And we even have a surprise guest. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, Candid Frank Live here on Blog Talk Radio, and tonight we have a real loaded show for you today, and it's a live Wednesday broadcast. Now, tonight we have a lot of guests, I have to tell you, a lot of guests, and I even got a call from a surprise guest. First of all, introduce yourself, and we'll give people a tease to know what we'll be talking about later on.
Hi, this is Janice from the Elite Football League of India. We're American-style football league that launched in India last year. Our first season was played on one of the top TV stations in India. And Kurt Warner, Mike Ditka, Mark Wahlberg, Ron Jaworski, all are backers of our league. And it's an exciting endeavor.
And quite an unusual endeavor. And we're going to talk to you at length. And for those of you that want to listen to that program, I will let you know when it'll be on. And tell us your name again.
This is Janice Foreman. I'm a co-founding partner of the EFLI.
Now, really quick, so I can get on to my other guests, so that these are mostly or all nationals of India?
Yeah, we have all Indian players. We brought over American coaches, Doug Plank being one of them from Chicago Bears, came over and they spent time and we went through all the cities in India, and we had 10,000 applicants come out and try out for our team, and we only have Indian players on our team.
Well, it's awesome. Janice, my email, and I don't mind sharing it with everyone out there, is CandidFrankLive, just like it sounds, CandidFrank, live, at gmail.com. Send me an email, and we'll straighten out this communication problem we had, which I think is a great one. It was a great opportunity to talk to you and let people know that the game of football is being played in India. Now, all we need to do, Janice, I have to tell you, being a Canadian Football League fan, maybe we got to convince them that being Commonwealth country, maybe they should play Canadian rules football.
Well, maybe we do.
So will you give me an email, send me an email, and we'll arrange to have you on next week.
That sounds great. Looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Yes, and that way I can dedicate more time to this interesting subject. I have too many guests tonight, and it wouldn't be fair to have you on tonight because I'd be squeezing everybody, and there's a lot of important things we want to talk about tonight and talk to, and you're one of them. And next week I look forward to arranging a longer discussion.
Great. I'll look forward to it as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice. That's
okay.
Janice Bowman. That's Janice Bowman. You too. That's Janice Bowman of the ELFI. It is the Elite Football League of India. That's right, the Elite Football League of India. We've got a caller already. I haven't had a chance to even do my intro. It's Grand Central Station. Who am I talking to? Hello? Hello? Line 3, you're up. Line 3, you're up. We'll try again in a minute. Maybe you're just not there right now. And now we've got another caller. Okay, let's see. Oh, I know. I recognize this number. Mike, is that you?
Yeah, hello?
Hey, Mike.
Sorry about that.
No worries, man. Hang in there for a minute, and I'll get to you in a second. And we've got a lot of people on tonight, and I got to make some phone calls. But first, I wanted to run through a few things, and then we'll get down to the live broadcast. All right, that's Mike, the American CFL football fan. Now, I wanted to discuss a couple of things, do a couple of things here, and it looks like I'm not going to get a chance to do it because there's too many people interested on being on the program tonight. Now, hey, that's a good thing. I'm not complaining for a second. When guests start calling you right away just because they know that you're interested in talking to them, that's a pretty good thing in my mind. Well, anyway, tonight we have football expert Mike Townsend in, and we'll be talking to him. He is he's an aspiring general manager, and he would like to work in the CFL, but he's more than willing to work in the Indoor Football League as well. And he's going to share some of his opinions and give us some information behind the game, the players, the teams, and what makes them tick. And that'll be our talk. Now, the question consistently for CFL is, where are the young fans? Where are these young fans that are going to fill the seats after the old fogies like me are dead and gone? Well, we got a couple on tonight, one younger than the other, but still both relatively youthful. And they'll talk to us about their experience being CFL fans and why they think young fans can get into the game. And that'll be the subject there. And then later on tonight, Scott Nichols will be on in our final hour, and we'll be talking to Scott. Broadcaster Scott is going to – him and I are going to have some fun. His favorite subjects are, of course, the Riders and the Maple Leafs. How's that for irony? Well, it shouldn't be, because Wendell Clark is one of the most fabled Maple Leafs, and he hails from Saskatchewan. So it can't be that wrong a thing for him. So before we start the program, as I said, there were a couple of things I wanted to touch on. And the first one I want to touch on is this story that just came out. For those of you that love the state of Florida and love what goes on in Florida, something really big happened. A great Canadian moment. After four failed attempts, 64-year-old Canadian endurance swimmer Diane Nyad is the first to swim across the 160-kilometer Florida Strait from Cuba to Florida in just 53 hours without a shark tank. Right after reaching the shore of Key West, this is what our hero Diane Nyad had to say, swollen lips and all.
I got three messages. One is, we should never, ever give up.
Okay.
Two is, you're never too old to chase your dreams.
That's right.
Three is, it looks like a solitary sport, but it's a team.
Now, this is a 64-year-old woman who said, you're never too old to chase your dream. Well, I kind of hope she's right, because we all have dreams at different stages in our lives. As we have a guest, Mike Townsend, who's chasing the dream of being a GM or a scout, or he wants to get into pro football in some sort of management capacity. And this isn't, he's not trying out for the position on this show. What he's trying out for in the show is to be a guest. And I know he's a very intelligent and a wise football guy, and we're going to get a chance to hear things from an intelligent football expert from their opinion. Now, we have our usual expert. He's just called in, Mike from Minnesota. He'll join the conversation as well, and just for Mike Townsend's benefit, Mike from Minnesota is always a welcome person on this program whenever he has time. He's an unofficial regular host on this program. He is, by virtue of his activity and action on this program, he is a host as important as I am on this program, and I always welcome him. So I would ask my guests that we scheduled not to be offended that we include Mike in this. I always like to include Mike. He's a very loyal listener and contributor, and for that I am grateful, and the best way I can show my gratitude is always have an open mic for Mike. I guess that's fair, right? This is all off the cuff, so, you know, if it sucks, it's not my fault. I just popped into my head. So Diane Nyad talks about team effort. That's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to have a team of people on the mics, and we're going to be talking about being a CFL fan as well, and that goes towards the never giving up part as well. Now, one piece of there's more than one piece of CFL information I would like to mention. And we'll talk, you know what, maybe we'll open up the mics and we'll talk about these subjects. Some really interesting stuff happening in the CFL. Now, last night was a tough night in bed. My wife woke up a few times and she kept patting me on the back and consoling me. And I had a very tough night's sleep after watching that game yesterday. It was horrifying. I mean, as an Argo fan, boys, you know I love you, right? You Argo players, I love you guys to death. You're my boys, and I got your back. But, man, you could have played a little better. That was awful. Guys, I hope you take seriously what Coach Milanovic tells you once your ears stop burning. I'll tell you, that was one of the worst efforts I've seen by an Argo team in a long time. Am I exaggerating? Well, we'll hear it from everybody else on the show tonight, but I was crying in bed. I was in the fetal position. I could not believe my wife. She tried so many ways. She tried things she's not willing to do most times. So, you know, it was one of those nights where I felt a lot of compassion from my wife. My heart was broken. The Argos lost against Montreal of all teams, and it was devastating. The pain, I got to tell you, I'm still not over it. The only thing I'm grateful for is usually on a Tuesday night when we have a game, I have trouble talking. In fact, I lost my voice completely one time. I had to cancel a show on a Wednesday. I didn't have that problem last night. There wasn't much to cheer about. Oh, it was horrifying. It was a horrifying game, one that I hope the boys will remember and improve upon and understand that they've got to really concentrate. The mistakes that they made last night were terrible. They were not a Grey Cup champion last night, to say the least. All right, let's start. I'm going to give Mike Townsend a call first, okay, guys? I know you're all on there, but let me get Mike in here first. I promised to have him on, and I'm going to do that, and we're going to start with him, and then we'll talk about him for a little bit, and then what we'll do is we'll bring you guys all in, and we'll do our radio guess who's talking thing that we do. And this is a challenge. A lot of people think this is crazy to have 3-4 people on a radio show talking without a producer. But I'm going to do
it. Hello?
Mike, how you doing?
I'm okay. How you doing, Frank?
I'm doing awesome. Mike, by the way, I always enjoy your Facebook messages. I have to tell you that I'm a lover of children. My wife, from time to time, takes care of some of the neighborhood kids. And I love playing basketball with them. And you've posted some pretty cute babies there. And I'm not a politician, so it's sincere love of children and how wonderful they really are. And they are God's gift to man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, my daughter was born on August 16th, and
wow.
She actually was sitting in my arms while I was watching the CFL game. Toronto was playing. I forgot who they were playing, but she actually.
Montreal,
that's what it was. She actually stayed up and watched the whole third quarter.
Well, here,
she didn't know what she was looking at.
Just for your information, we're part of the Argo Lifers. It's we're a group that supports the Toronto Argonauts vociferously, loudly, and all the time. And we sit beside the visiting team's family. So I get a chance to meet last night, I'll just tell you the story because I really do love children. And there was this one young boy. Last year, he couldn't have been more than a year and a half. And he wanted to bang the drums that we had. So at halftime, we let him bang the drums. And son of a gun, if he didn't remember me, and he goes to his grandfather, he's sitting in his grandfather's and he's got his arms out and he wants to come to me because he knows I brought him to the drums last time. So that's one of the reasons why I love children. They're fantastic. It's great. And congratulations. I wanted to do that first. And let's talk about your aspiration. What makes you think, and don't take this the wrong way, but what makes you think that you would make either a good GM or an assistant GM or a scout? What do you have in your background that gives you the opportunity to think you could do that?
Well, I played a little bit of high school football. Not much, but just a little bit. But I learned the game as I was growing up. I used to have season tickets to the Detroit Drive Arena football game because my mom bought it for me when I was a child. So growing up watching arena football, growing up watching the CFL, actually, I think the CFL over the NFL. If you've been looking at my chats, I always say that. I pick the CFL over the NFL any day except my Detroit Lions. And, studying game film on different players, watching how different players play on offense and defense, their weaknesses, their strengths, things they can do to better themselves as a player, all-around player. And I feel like I have the aspiration to do it. You know, you don't have to be a superstar player that played in the league for years to be a GM, because you have a lot of GMs and scouts that's in the league right now that can barely win games from the players that they pick.
I gotcha. All right, now we'll bring in. So I think I've got you in here. It's like you called twice.
Oh, yeah, you called one of the ears if I clicked over.
Okay, gotcha, man. All right, now joining us, who's with us as well? Still no answer. I'm not going to tell them the phone number, but there's still no answer. I don't want to hang up on the dude because maybe he's just hanging away from the phone. Now, we lost Mike, but that's okay. And this is the other number is the same number as yours. So there you are twice. Okay, we'll hang that one up. We'll hang that one up and because I've got you in twice. And now I'm going to bring in a couple of guys that are CFL fans. They're of the younger variety, one younger than the other. That's not to suggest that there's anything wrong with being young, but, you know, we need some new blood in this league. Now, tell us about your CFL take on the season thus far. Who do you see as the favorite and why? And who do you see as having trouble and why?
Well, my favorite right now, and I'm going to go against my bitter judgment because I'm not the fan, but I actually see the Riders taking this one.
Okay.
If the Riders only going to beat themselves because they are all cylinders right now, and they just their motors are going fast and nonstop.
And who do you see as having trouble this year other than the obvious?
So having trouble, let me see, where can I start? Edmonton, of course, and then Winnipeg. It's like Winnipeg can't catch a break. They're going through three quarterbacks so far, and then they just added Levi Brown. So I think Winnipeg right now is having problems, real bad problems.
Now, that was one of the subjects I was going to broach. You've got Levi Brown, who last year, I guess, played for Buffalo. What makes a quarterback a CFL quarterback in your mind, in your definition?
Well, to me, a CFL quarterback, if anybody watches the CFL game, I figure 95% passing, 5% run, with it being three downs, you're going to have to know how to throw that ball with accuracy, because you have a lot of guys that come to the league that don't know how to play on a big field. You know, the field is wider and bigger. So to be a CFL quarterback, you have to have arm strength. And you have to have an accurate pass.
And without that, you don't have
without
much.
Without that, you won't survive on the CFL field. I'm sorry. You'll be on the street looking for employment.
Now, the CFL has had, it seems, some good luck with some young quarterbacks. For example, with Kolaros, Zach had a great start to his CFL career. His first game against BC, a quality team. He had a great game. Last night, how would you define the difference between the quarterback that played against BC and the one that ended up playing against Montreal last night?
Well, from what I didn't see the game because I was actually riding. From what I was reading on the notes, that he played pretty well. I think he had, I think it was 221 yards passing, one touchdown, one interception. His completion attempt was better than what it was last week. Because when he played against DC, it's like he was just thrown into the game. So he was kind of off against DC last week, but it's like he was getting better week by week. Now, this Friday when they play again, time will tell.
Yeah. Now, joining us now is one of the young fans, one of the fans that I hear don't exist. Are you there, Jason?
Yes, I am.
Hey, buddy,
hey,
how's
Jake,
it going?
How
I'm good, man. How are you guys?
Good.
Come on, right?
Now, Jason was at the game with me last night, Mike. So we'll give Jason a chance. Jason, what do you think was the difference between the Kolaros that played last night and the one that played against BC?
Last night, Toronto, honestly, you guys had no heart. And like Frank said earlier, we love you guys, but you guys, that's not how you win a great cup. That's not how you prove that you're first in your division or first in the East at all. I didn't see any heart from Kolaros, from Barnes. Owens was fumbling the ball all over the place. It was really horrible.
Now, you're a young fan. What is it? What do you find, the best part about coming out to the CFL and following the Argos, other than that game last night, which must have been difficult to swallow?
Well, I love chilling with the Argos lifers. I mean, you guys really help prove that Toronto actually does have fans, and the CFL really does have fans, that we don't need an NFL team in a big city like Toronto.
Gotcha.
But yesterday, a lot of the lifers were not there, as you know, Frank.
Yeah, and it seems almost like the lifers were out of the team, too. The life was out of... No, never mind. I was trying a stupid pun there. It didn't work too good. Mike Townsend?
Yes, sir.
Now, in the CFL, we do have difficulty bringing in young fans. What do you think... What qualities of the game that you could share with other football fans that the CFL has that makes it attractive to you even more than the NFL, other than your Detroit Lions, in your opinion?
In my opinion, what got me when I first started watching the game was the three downs. I knew it was kind of different from the NFL, but the three down rule makes the CFL great. You get fast-paced scoring. The game is fast. And you're going to get high scores. Any which way you watch the game, you're going to get high scores from some team. Whether if it's 20-9, 37-34, you're going to get some high scoring. You're going to get some hard-hitting action. The kickoff rule, no fair catch, I love that. That's something they should implement in the NFL, is the no fair catch rule.
And basically just yardage and that's it.
Yep, that's it. Yardage and that's it.
And give a guy a chance. And when the CFL expands, what do you see as the advantage for the expansion into Ottawa as an outsider, Mike?
As an outsider, I see the expansion doing well. I don't know too much about Jeff Hunt, but what I was reading in, that he knows what he's doing as far as being a sports owner, and that he gives his all. So I think with Ottawa, I think it's going to be a good team to reckon with from years to come, but they also have to make sure if they're going to be a good team to bring fans in the stands, they're going to have to start off with a good quarterback. Because if they start losing, they're going to lose the fans.
They've got a good shot to get a good quarterback with CFL experience because all the teams will only be able to protect one, and most teams carry three. So there's a good chance that they'll have two really good quarterbacks off the get-go before they even get into free agency.
Yep, and that's where a lot of teams are going to have some problems, like Calgary, for instance. Calgary, on the offseason, is going to really have to make some decisions. Where if they're going to release Drew Tate, Kevin Glenn, or Bo Levi Mitchell. Now, myself, I'm thinking if I had to release one of the three, I'm going with Drew Tate. Drew Tate been in Calgary for a number of years, even behind Harry Burris, and to me, he hasn't really shown that he's able to take the team to the next step. He shows flashes, but flashes are not going to get it done in the CFL.
And I guess another question that arises because of his history is, can he take a hit?
Yep. That's one of the questions. And so far, he might take a hit. He might survive through the game, but the next week he's on the injured list because of an unidentified injury that he suffered in the previous week. So, you know, Huffnagel and them, they got some decisions to make. And if I was Ottawa, I'd be licking my chops if they released Kevin Glenn. You're looking at Kevin Glenn, he's been a winner everywhere he played. Winnipeg, Hamilton, and then he goes to Calgary. I mean, if you're looking at a guy that got a good percentage, accurate pass percentage, he's a pocket passer, he really don't make no mistakes. That's the guy I would want on my team if I was to start a franchise with a veteran quarterback.
Give your young guys a chance to learn.
Give them a chance to develop and learn. Because you need that veteran to teach these young guys how to play the game and to know their mistakes and know what to do in crunch time.
Okay, let's do an inventory. Who's here? Jason, you're here, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Mike Townsend's here.
Yes, sir.
Now, I got two other numbers up here, and they're surprising me. I don't know who they are.
Wow.
Okay, who else is here? It's like secret guest. We're playing secret guest. Give it up, man. Who are you? Oh, it doesn't matter. We've got two people in the room with us, guys. I'm sure, none of you guys are trying to run from some legal issue, are you? Because I don't want to get you in trouble. I know I am. So, you know, I'm worried about who two guys are.
It's probably my fiance listening in because she wants to listen to me on the show tonight. So that might be her.
That,
hey, Ebony.
That's right. She made sure that you understood that she'd be backing you up, Jason. Mm-hmm. How did you? Do you have any football history, or is it just the enjoyment, the atmosphere of the game that drew you to it?
Actually, I do have football history. I used to be a wide receiver in high school, and I grew up watching football with my dad. NFL is my dad's favorite thing to watch, and the only day of the week he won't work is Sunday because of football. So I grew up watching the Broncos, the Ravens, and the Patriots a lot.
Very good. So obviously you have an understanding of the game. And how would you compare the two games, NFL and CFL?
Sorry?
How would you compare the NFL and the CFL from your youthful experience and background?
The NFL, I've seen... To be honest with you, I think it's a bit overrated. A lot of people will probably shake their head at me for that, but you can go to a CFL game and it will be the same atmosphere as long as the fan base that you're with is just as energetic. The NFL, the only difference to me is the bigger stadiums, a lot of outdoor stadiums, play in the snow, play in the rain, play whatever. But the big difference to me is, like Mike said earlier, the three downs rule. It makes teams have to kind of be a little bit smarter with the football. If you want to do a run play, you have to make sure that it's a good run, or you guys might get stopped 2-and-out. If you want to throw the ball, you can't throw too short. You can't throw into coverage so often. You have to make sure that you protect the football, man.
And that makes a lot of sense. And a lot of times, I think football is such a team concept. And it sounds crazy, but it is one of the only sports that requires you to be predictable and surprising at the same time. I don't understand it, but that's, you know, it's much like when a player is going down the ice in hockey at that moment when they're going on the goaltender. They've got to do something. They've got to do it right. And they've got to keep it secret. It's quite an interesting combination. Mike?
Yes, it is. Yes,
there
sir.
You go. And now there's going to be two Mikes here now. There's Mike Minnesota and Mike Townsend. So Mike T and Mike M. Mike M, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
I'm good. Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Doing good, sir.
All right. So we got enough Mikes on the show, and we got enough Mikes on the show. Both ways. It works. Mike from Minnesota. Now, he's my intelligent guy. Mike, I know what you'll want to do right now because you want to do it every week, and we're going to do it. We're going to review what happened in the CFL last week. Let's start, Mike, in your opinion. Let's talk about the four games, one game at a time. We'll get everybody's opinion. You want to start with I'll start with last night because that one I want to get out of the way as quickly as possible because I want to stop thinking about it more, as soon as I can. anyway, all kidding aside, we'll talk about that one because it's the most recent game, and of course that's week 10, and week 10 included a game between our friends. What am I looking at here? Oh, here we go. My goodness. What year am I in here? Okay, just talk about the Toronto Montreal game last night. Mike of Minnesota.
Yeah. Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, just breaking. Okay, yeah, no. The one I wanted to say was just about last night. First off, that was an embarrassment for the league. First of all, you had hardly anybody at the game, so the atmosphere was totally dead. Then you back it up with the Argos playing as flat as I've ever seen a team play. And I'm not even mad at them because there was no energy at all from the stadium. I mean, it looked like there was 20 people at the game. And I had, you know, that game was on NBC Sports Network, and I had a bunch of friends of mine. You know, I told them, hey, tune in, there's a CFL game. And they looked at that, and they were just like, they seen Division III NCAA football that had more energy and more people in the stands than that. I mean, as far as I can tell, the CFL just needs to get out of Toronto. I know, you know, Frank, you and John and all those guys, you guys try to create an atmosphere, but, I mean, come on. I mean, how can a city with 7 million people barely draw a crowd, have no fan base whatsoever? I mean, you would have thought that team just started this year. It's a team that's been around for like 115 years. And they have 10,000 season ticket holders? I mean, come on, man.
Well, it had kind of a high school atmosphere, I hate to say.
High
and
school?
Ironically,
that wasn't high school, Frank. That was that was like peewee. Well, I don't know what that was. It looked like all the people there were like the players' families and friends. I mean, what was that, man? It was like each section, you could look, when you're looking on TV, you saw like five people in a row, then like 15 empty seats, and then you saw another couple, two or three people, another 10 empty seats, and then another person sitting right there. It's like, I mean, as a league, why didn't they just black that out or like put that on TSN2 or like not even air that? I mean, that's embarrassing.
Wow, Mikey, was that bad, huh?
It was terrible, man. And the game was so bad. The third quarter, I literally could not watch anymore. Like, I'm a huge CFL fan. I've been trying to convince all my friends they need to check it out. It's a league. It's a good league. But, man, by the third quarter, I was done. I was done even as of just rooting for the Argos. I'm finished. I'm done. I'm not cheering for the Argos anymore. Toronto doesn't even deserve to have a team. If you're going to support it like that, why even bother? Why do they even have a franchise? I mean, that's a joke, man. And
but
you back it
you
up
know
with
what?
Terrible
I'm
play.
Not gonna say
I mean, it's pointless.
Okay, Mike. Go ahead, Mike Townsend.
I'm not going to say it's a joke. The deal with Toronto lost their swag when Ricky Wade went down. That's where they lost it. And, you know, being a football franchise, you have to have a good quality backup. And I didn't say this in my CFL chat room. And I'm with you too, Mike. Caleros, he just don't do it for me. From the game that I watched last week, I was done with him. Maybe third, fourth quarter, I was done with him. So Caleros doesn't do it for me. Toronto needs to find ways to win. If you have to go sign somebody to bring him in to Ricky Ray, get healthy, get better, so-called do it. Do what you got to do to get them W's. Once they start losing, watch the fans in the seats. It's going to be empty seats and more fans. So I do agree with you on that.
But,
the
one thing, Mike, you know, is it's like it's not even about the players. It's not even about the team. Because this is a team that won the championship last year and still is in first place in the East. It's the fact that people in Toronto do not care one iota about the CFL. It's a joke. A city that big, there's no fan support, none. There's none. It's nothing. It's an absolute joke of a franchise. They've been losing money every year probably since God knows how long. When you compare it to all the other franchises, every other one, Montreal, Hamilton, don't even go to the West. Once you go to the West, it's like 10 times better. It's like, why do they have a team? I mean, I don't understand why they're not trying to get that team out of town or just fold them. Because it's just, I mean, I've been back and forth with Frank about this going back to last year. And I don't understand what is it going to take. Because you talked about them winning, that'll get people to come. They just did that. And people still ain't showed up. And no one is coming. No one even cares.
Well, I don't know that
all the people in Toronto, they always rip the CFL. They talk about the CFL as a joke.
Mike, slow down. So let me. You brought my name into it, and I never said at any time that because they won the Grey Cup, everybody's going to show up. I'm one of the first people to tell you that the Argos, the first time they won the Grey Cup was the was the end of their big fan base. And that's something I can tell you. And I can tell you also now that John's gotten on the phone, and now we're in trouble. You see what you went and did, Mike? Yeah, now you got John.
There's nothing
John said he wasn't
going to
call tonight. Give everybody else a chance to talk. It's pretty easy to criticize the Argos on the one game as far as a team's concerned. But to criticize the city that way, I don't think it's the city's fault. I think it's the league's fault. I think it's the people who love the game of football in Toronto that are to blame because they haven't stood behind the team the way they should. They shouldn't be treated that we've let the Sky Dome situation create a real rotten situation that's been all part of the rotten atmosphere that is at the Argo games because it's just too big for the league. That stadium on an everyday basis is too big for the league. John, you want to pipe in?
Hello, gentlemen. Hear some CFL talk. Good to hear all you guys. And Mike, no worries. Listen, you're half correct, and there's no blame in how Mike feels because he's separated from the reality of what we lived through for the last 30 decades. So I can't blame Mike. He's expecting the same performance that a championship team performed in last year and barely made it. But we have to remember they were 99 last year before they turned it on and became a champion. So, and then when they broke apart through the off season and trying to revamp their defense, and which no one's saying about their defense is all banged up. They have been for the last three games straight. But again, back to the Toronto thing, not supporting it. I can't argue with Mike's point, except for the fact that what he's saying, they don't deserve a team, and the fact that they shouldn't have a team. Mike, without Toronto, and I've heard this before for the last 10 years in a row, especially about 12 years ago, that the league's going to fall apart, they're not going to survive. I've heard of being on the crutches I don't know how many times, and the only one stability that the whole entire league realized is that if Toronto dies, the league dies. And I know you guys are going to say, how is that possible, television? The nucleus is still here. The problem is that it's been torn down with the media here, breaking it down a negative level, always comparing it to the NFL being the better hype, calling it a Bush League by a lot of senior public representatives here in Toronto who ran the newspapers and so forth and took out the standings of the CFL just to deter people 4 or 5 years from knowing there's even a league in the city. So that's because people jumped on the NFL, I want to be an NFL reporter in the media, press pass, I want to be part of that, and so they all went negative on the CFL. CFL had its problems, and it still does to some aspect. It's definitely from night and day from what it was a decade ago. But again, to Mike's point, I can't blame the guy. He's not deeply involved like we are fans, knowing what happens on a yearly basis, on a daily basis, on a decade basis. So you have that impression that the football fans aren't here. The right type. Toronto is not right for NFL because we don't have the high school support, the college support, and evidently we don't have any sort of football support because they can't even support something that, is Canadian branded, okay? Historical factor. Well, that historical factor has even been tarnished because they don't mention it as being vital to this league, the fact that Toronto is such a historical implement in this league. That also has not been spoken of. All we keep talking about is how bad it looks, the bad attendance, and all that stuff. Well, guys, you know what? It's got to start somewhere, and it's got to start with people who really care about football. Now, are there enough people in Toronto who care about football?
No.
You guys are the judge of that, the outsiders.
That's,
okay?
It's a no.
And that same voice, though, please voice on ESPN radio shows and tell them that Toronto doesn't deserve an NFL team for the same reasons that you guys are saying right now, we don't deserve a CFL team. Okay, that's what I need from real people who look at it that way, Mike, because if you got that same feeling because of one game that was on a school return night, remember in Toronto last night it was back to school, the kids aren't going to bring, I had half the lifers stayed home because they had their kids that, went to school the first day and they want to prep them for the next day. Terrible. That's, again, Rogers Centre and the Blue Jays to blame, not the Toronto fans, not the city of Toronto.
Okay,
that's
but John, you're missing a big point. The fact is they only have, barely 10,000 season ticket holders in a city that big. That's completely inexcusable.
It is Ottawa,
okay, right now, Ottawa
Mike,
doesn't even
Mike,
have a team.
Mike.
Ottawa opens next year. They already have 10,000. And they don't even have a team yet.
Ottawa had 5,000 season ticket holders when they fell apart. They went down to 1,000. It all depends on you have to let them know and let them miss it for a while to realize what they really deserve
Dude,
and want back.
If the Argos disappeared, I guarantee
again.
You people
Believe
in Toronto wouldn't
Toronto
even notice. They wouldn't
Toronto,
they would literally,
CFL,
no one else would
years,
even notice or
if
care.
If it revived again, they would sell out with a brand new stadium just like Ottawa is. But they can't. The CFL can't afford it in Toronto. All the networks are stationed here. They just can't do
okay.
it. Market-wise,
okay.
The banks
John,
are here.
John, gotcha,
how,
John.
How is
you
that
going to
affect
your,
the fans
John and
Mike, the West?
John and Mike, John and
That's
Mike.
That's not
going to
affect it.
Listen, guys, you're both right, okay? But here's the problem. What needs to happen, and John alluded to it really accurately. Let's face it. In every city, whether it doesn't matter what sport it is, unless the team has a deep investment from the city. And whatever the business in the neighborhood, whatever. Like, compare the Green Bay Packers to the Baltimore Colts, okay? The Baltimore Colts had an exciting history, had a great history. I grew up, Johnny Unitas was one of my favorite quarterbacks. And to John's point, and Mike, you have to understand this. It's a Tuesday night after a long weekend. Who the hell wants to go anywhere on a Tuesday night
yeah,
after
but
a long
Frank,
weekend?
It's not just about last night. It's about
no,
this whole year. It's
that,
about
John
this whole thing.
That, and I agree.
It's been a
Listen.
Failing thing for like 20, 30 years. This is,
but
it's
been
had
an
three
erosion.
Or four good
it's
years.
Been an erosion.
Every other year it's been. I mean, does,
Mike,
okay, do the Argos advertise at all in the city? Do they market themselves? Do they put
yes,
any advertising
listen,
dollars?
Do
you see
here's
TV
the,
commercials?
Here's the problem. Mike, I told you this a couple of weeks ago, and I want you to hear this, and I want you to hear it clearly, okay?
Okay.
When the broadcaster for the team and the league, all right, does their one-hour sports show, and they do a half hour, that they do an hour, and the first half hour doesn't include the CFL, and the second half hour includes about 30 seconds of the CFL, that should tell you enough about the erosion of, let's face it, man, for a team to be successful, the media has to pump it out there and make it look important. But
yeah,
like
but,
John said,
okay.
but you know, Mike, you don't live here. You haven't lived the experience of being a Toronto CFL fan. They
yeah, but
like,
I mean,
the
end of the
media,
day, Frank, with all that put aside, you got to just call it like it is. Every other city you go to, people at least care about the team,
yes.
about the league. Even
You're
in
right.
Montreal, Montreal is a big East Coast city, but they have a if they host the East final, they're going to get 50,000 plus.
Hey,
if Toronto
realize,
has the
if
East
they
final,
hold,
they'll
Mike,
be lucky if they
Montreal,
get 25,000.
Guys, can I just interject for one
That's
thing?
It.
Montreal, 20,000. 21, 22, if you're packing it, okay? So we
okay,
got the same attendance. Mike, listen, Eastern
John,
final.
John, how many
Eastern
people
final?
Showed up to the East final?
Listen, Eastern final. What do you mean they didn't show up to the Eastern final? Or did you,
no, no,
you
no. He's talking
numbers?
About the game in Montreal. He's talking about the game in Montreal, John.
I'm,
yeah, I'm talking
about
the
East
final.
Listen,
yeah.
Eastern final, the Sky Dome, look.
They had 33,000 in 2007.
Listen,
that's all.
That's, we're talking different numbers, different people, different ownerships, okay? So if we're talking about in generality here, if you're going to compare us to Montreal attendance, we're talking 21,000 people here every game, Mike, and only in the Eastern finals if they get it, okay, if they're fortunate
yeah, but at
to
least-
get it.
Okay, that actually reflects that if the team is actually doing something, the people
in
Montreal notice.
And of those Montreal people in Montreal
if Toronto went
from Toronto. We were from
Toronto. If
Toronto
went
Frank
18-0, no one would notice in the city. The only time people notice is when they made it to the Grey Cup and the whole scene
Mike,
of the 100th Grey
Mike,
Cup.
The Eastern
every
final
other
Montreal,
city, John, every
Mike,
other Canadian city,
Mike, let me,
people
can I
care
add,
about
back.
The team.
Mike, you throw
Except
an Eastern final comparing Montreal. There were 8,000 Toronto fans at that forum. So that attendance is not what you're thinking it is
okay.
in Montreal.
Okay, let
that...
me give you some other numbers. 2010
no, you
East final,
59.
You know what? It's really unfair to compare Toronto to Montreal. It's really yeah. unfair to compare it. I
you
mean,
know
you know,
being,
with the Argo situation.
Okay, Mike Towns,
with the Argo,
Mike Towns in the chance to pipe up.
Yeah, it's really unfair to compare both cities, Montreal to Toronto. Okay, agree, Toronto do lose some fans. And, you know, maybe they need to market it more. Maybe they need to bring maybe a big-time player in to market the team also. You know, maybe they need to do that.
It, you know what? The
because
player
know-
names won't matter. The player names won't matter here. It has to be a mental change in the atmosphere here, and it has to be starting with the new management that's going to have to take over with stadium ownership and everything. Right now, have
Bingo.
You guys ever heard of? Now let me just let you guys know something. There's been a negotiation with the Rogers Center for an extended lease now for 2.5 years. If that's not bullshit, I don't know what is. It's been for 2 town halls we've gone to season ticket holders where they've told us that they're working on an extension with the Rogers Center. Okay, this thing with Toronto and the attendance is not going to go. They're not going to have money for marketing, guys. You know why? Let me tell you something. Everything sold in the Rogers Center, they get nickel, nothing. The merchandise that they sell of their own shit, they can't even put displays out how they want displays during games to sell the best product. It's the Rogers Center who owns everything inside, the juice, the materials, everything. Okay, the only thing that they get out of the place is the seat dollar, all right? And that's it. That's because they pay
zero. And not all of it, John. John, and
not all of it. Not all of it, okay? So what I'm just trying to say is this. Until this thing clears up with them getting their own facility, all right, it's not about how many people, how big of a stadium it is, and nothing to do with that, all right? In B.C., they only get 22,000, 23,000. I see a half-empty stadium there too, okay? It's the same problem. It's the
it's
same
not the
issue.
Same problem,
we've
John.
Been down.
It's not even close. It's
well,
not even close, John.
You know what, have you looked at the upper deck in B.C.?
Yeah,
okay,
the thing you wait for, you keep
if you were
forgetting
talking about empty stadiums, if you were to talk about empty stadiums, look at the one down in Jacksonville, Florida, when the Jaguars play. You have
exactly.
more seat covers than fans.
The whole point is that the Argos are bringing the entire league down. That's a fact. I don't care what anyone else says. Financially, it's reflected. It's a black eye on the whole league. How can you
of
have
course
a
it
team?
Is.
This
Mike.
Is like having the New York Giants barely have a fan base. That's unthinkable. Why? Because it's the biggest city in America. How can the biggest city in Canada have no fan base whatsoever?
Live here for 20 years and watch them deteriorate a Canadian product,
right.
verbally, visually, Mike, every single day, every season, breaking it down, calling it a bush league, quote-unquote, dude.
Exactly.
Call
that's my point. The fact
well,
is, you go
point.
To Saskatchewan...
Well,
huge fan base. You go to Winnipeg, huge fan base. They built
totally
a beautiful stadium. Edmonton, big fan base. Calgary, fan base. Vancouver, West Final shows up, you're getting 40,000 plus guaranteed. You have an East Final in Toronto, they'll be lucky if they crack 30, and they know they won't.
Can I ask you something? I don't want to take the conversation over, but Mike, you're comparing different cities unfairly. Calgary, do they have an NBA team? Do they have a Major League Baseball team? Do they have these professional teams that interject with sales to another league's profits, okay? They don't.
Yeah, but those cities don't have, like, 5 to 7 million people. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you don't hear the New York Giants complaining about the fact that they have the Jets, the Knicks, the Brooklyn Nets. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't make any sense because you look at the in America.
Live here,
the Giants, have another football team. They've got several basketball teams, several baseball teams, several hockey teams. You hear the Giants get out there and say,
you
know, we've got too much. No, that's ridiculous, John. How can you have a city that big that doesn't mean there can't be football fans?
Okay, Mike, you made your points. You made quite a few points. Give some other people to let's start with Mike Townsend. Did you get a chance to respond to some of the points that Mike from Minnesota made? And if you didn't, please pipe
in. Yeah, I was able to respond to some of the points, and I do agree. The fan base in Toronto is kind of skimpy. But what do you think they need to do to bring that fan base up? Do you think they need to be some new owners, new management, market the team right? What do you think they need to do?
Mike, can I jump in here?
Yes,
can I jump in here? Okay. First of all, Mike of Minnesota hasn't lived the Argo experience for a lifetime. I have. I'm 60 years old, and I've seen the stadium. I've been in the stadium with 45,000 people in it. I've watched on television how they've been covered. I've listened on radio how they've been covered over those years. I'm talking decades here, like John's trying to say. I've watched television over the decades on how the team was covered. They don't have Big Daddy. The problem with the Argos is they don't have Big Daddy. And I'm going to try and say it as simple as I can. They don't have, like, the guy that we've got basically handling the team right now that owns the team, he is a senator in the government, and all he's trying to do is keep the team alive. And the only way to make the team better, all right, is to have, first of all, a consistent schedule that gets people thinking about the Argos at a certain time on a certain day, or at least a short list of days, A. B, somebody who actually cares in the media about the game, and somebody who actually says, you know what, it's a sport, let's give it a chance, instead of work negatively. Please don't underestimate the fact that Rogers is a very big company whose interest was clearly in the NFL, and anything they did was to reflect that the NFL belonged in Toronto, not the CFL. And trust me when I say this, the media here has undermined the existence of the Argos, and mostly because there's nobody to speak on their behalf. Look what happened when TSN finally got in here and started doing a little bit of promotion. They haven't done that much. They haven't spent a boatload of money promoting the league, yet they're getting good numbers on television. If they do that in Toronto as well, when I'm not talking about TSN, I'm talking about the Toronto media, you know, at least said, hey, let's give this league a chance. Let's give this team a chance. Trust me, we'd have a lot better turnout, because we're all paying attention to what the word is out there. We all got our Facebook. We all got our Twitter. We all got our friends. We talk about what everybody else is talking about. If nobody's talking about the Argos, nobody's going to go. I've said my piece.
Okay,
who's
so
next?
You go through all the possible solutions. What are the number one? You said get a new owner. The other one's building
no,
a new stadium.
No, get a new stadium. A new stadium.
Okay, so let's look through the list. That's not even possible. Why? You know, politically, you're not going to get any enough the public money to get the financing for it. So
sure,
the other option is
sure,
you got to get a private owner to put the money in to make it happen. What private owner is going to come in
you
buy
said
the Argos?
Something. Stop.
Okay.
Stop. You said, where am I going to get the money? I'm going to tell you where we're going to get the money. The
okay.
same way we're getting a subway system in Scarborough. The provincial government has finally said, here in Ontario, has said, we don't care if the federal government or if the city has money to put a subway in. We're putting it in because it's the right thing to do. Once
okay.
people realize the right thing to do is to save an honorable franchise like the Toronto Argonauts, and I repeat, that plays for a trophy that's older than any other. It is one of the oldest football franchises ever. And it's in a big city of 6 million. It's an embarrassment the way the Argos have been treated. They will find the money. I'm answering your question.
Can I update everybody, Frank? Can I update everybody on something that in the last 48 hours, the MLSC group who runs the TFC management for the club went to the Argos facilities to tour their facilities and vice versa. The TFC have their own facilities in Downsview. It's a part of Toronto where they built it specifically for their soccer club. And if that isn't something that is part of negotiations as far as dealing something with BMO Field, I don't know what is. Because that's what's going to be the final result of all this. Okay, is going to be BMO, and they are going to partner up with MLSC, which is kind of ironic because MLSC is partners with Rogers, and Rogers is kicking out something that they're going to be partners with, partially, if they hook up at BMO. And just to go back to last night, Mike, nobody at TSN, nobody is complaining about the ratings on a Tuesday night for them. Okay, nobody. The attendance for the stands, absolutely. Now, you put in a Tuesday night game in Calgary or Edmonton after school night starts, we'll see how many they fill up in those cities that you say are such big followers. It doesn't happen like that. In Toronto, you got an even bigger hurdle. By the way, Mike, you didn't watch the first two quarters, because in the first two quarters, the whole entire stadium, Lower Bowl, was filled with university engineering students from, it was Frosh Week here. So I know you only watched the third and fourth to criticize the empty seats, because in the first quarter, dude, all the seats were full. We were packed behind us. Never
more than
like
ever.
That.
More than ever.
It was swamped. It was bumper to bumper first quarter. Now they all left at halftime. Their students
to drink
they want
beer.
To go party. Yeah, they went and half of them left. Okay, there was 8,000 of them last night in the stands on a walk-in. All right. So I don't know what you're watching, but the first half the place was packed. Okay. Second half, Booney Town. All right, and the performance.
I mean, the announced
field,
attendance was 18,000. So, I mean, that's who showed up. That's not counting who actually bought tickets. And your point just goes back into reiterate that, which is those guys probably got those tickets for free. So that just goes to just show just how bad this thing really is. I mean,
no,
at the end of the day,
that's how far down they have to start, Mike. That's how
exactly.
far down it's been destroyed. Yeah. So, again, write your complaints to ESPN radios and complain the same thing about them, about the NFL situation coming here. We don't deserve it. Tell them for the
exactly.
same reasons.
No,
we don't
the Bills,
it.
You talk to people who are involved with the Bills, they don't want to go to Toronto. They think there's no fan support there. I say Toronto shouldn't have a football team, period.
Period.
That's not a football
that's
town.
Not, nah,
that's a
nah.
hockey town. They support the Raptors. For whatever reason, they support
okay,
the Blue Jays.
Mike,
I have no idea why.
Mike,
but,
you follow.
You know,
okay, Mike, you follow sports, right? Mike, you follow sports, right?
Yeah.
What happens when a team gets a new stadium, generally speaking?
Okay,
I'm asking
let's
you a
just
question.
Call it like
answer
it
the question. Just
yeah,
answer
people
the question.
Get excited and they show up just for
okay,
the novelty
so stop.
Of the new stadium.
John brought up a point. John brought up a point that there might be an association between MLSC and the Argos, that being the two football teams, one European football, one Canadian football, working together and having one football stadium. Okay? And there is serious talk about renovating that stadium and rebuilding it. Now, it's for the benefit of both teams. Now, when that stadium is revamped and built and new, there's going to be a buzz about the stadium, one. Two, the association with MLSC is going to create, I believe, a cooling down of the heated, I think, anti-Argo sentiment by Rogers and all the other big companies. And maybe it'll get a little better. At least there'll be a new stadium. And there is a lot of truth in what John's saying. There are a lot of people in this town who are in the media who are going, well, you know, we're better than the CFL. We should get an NFL team. I'd rather go to Dallas than Hamilton. And there's reality
okay, now
in
check
that.
This out. If they bring an NFL team to Toronto, how many years do you think it's going to take for that team to even have a winning season? And if they don't have a winning season, the stands are going to be empty. Then what?
I mean, when the Bills were showing up, they weren't even selling out the Rogers
hey,
Center. When
guys,
the Bills showed
they're
up,
already
so.
Showing that. The hype is gone for the NFL here. The
right,
hype was here when they charged
time.
People that they had to buy a four-game package that extended 2.5 seasons, including 2 preseason games. They had to put a $5,000 retainer just to assure that they get tickets. And when after the first year, it was a flop as far as atmosphere goes, and the players are rejecting it. And now what happens? They were giving away 10,000 freebies. Freebies, guys. And if it's not happening here.
Yeah, but
it's
you know, guys,
let me just throw one more thing, Frank, about the NFL.
Yeah.
If they ever did come, okay, Mike, if it ever did come, they would sell out for the first 2 years. And once we go 0-16 for the first 2 years, no one's going to be showing up, and then you're going to say we shouldn't have gotten in the first place. That's right, we shouldn't. We should keep it Canadian branded, and the NFL. Please keep it in Buffalo. I love the Bills. Let them play there. It's a totally different demographic of people and fans. We just don't got it here for that. And we don't deserve the NFL. And the NFL has no interest in breaking the CFL up here, guys. The NFL won't come up here unless the CFL is thriving. Okay? They will not put foot in here unless we are thriving. So the mentality has to change. If people want the NFL here, you better go buy a CFL ticket. Well, they're not buying either. Okay, they're not buying the NFL tickets no
okay.
more.
Okay, hang on, guys. Here's a prediction I'm going to make for you, all right? They just announced a couple of weeks ago that tailgating is now going to be not allowed at the Buffalo Bills games. What kind of impact do you think that's going to have on the people who go to the games? Does tailgating have anything to do with the success of fans showing up at the games? One at a time, I'm going to ask you about tailgating and how it impacts on a game, never mind the NFL, never mind the CFL, but the experience of a fan. Mike Townsend, what do you think tailgating has to do with that? Is it a positive, a negative, and if so, how much? Either way.
I couldn't hear the question because it was breaking up. What was it again?
Okay, the question is this. If I'm asking you tailgating, how important is tailgating to the fans' experience at a football game anywhere?
Tailgating is really important. I mean, for the people that don't have tickets, they out there with their TVs and the barbecue grills. They're supporting the team any which way it goes, whether it's tailgating or in the stands. They're out there to support. So if you stop tailgating, you're going to lose a lot of fans in that aspect also.
Thank you. Mike from Minnesota. And stick to the question, please.
Okay. No, I mean, yeah, it's absolutely, it's really important. But I guess in Canada, you couldn't drink anyway, right? When you're outside tailgating, right? That's the law.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then it's not even real tailgating in the first place.
Okay. So, but do you think tailgating is a positive or a negative?
Oh, it's absolutely a positive.
Okay, John, is it a positive or a negative?
Okay, well, it's definitely a positive, and second of all, the Buffalo fan base is devastated by the new
right.
law. Okay,
right.
They are,
okay, John,
they
hang
are
on. I'll let you carry on. Jason, is tailgating and the experience that you experience, is it a positive or a negative?
It's a positive, but the difference between tailgating and coming into the stadium to show your support goes along.
That would be a negative.
Okay, so tailgating. Well, tailgating is a positive, right? So tell me this. Here's what I'm going to predict for you guys. And then you can all take your turn. They're doing to the Bills what has happened over the years to the Argos. They're taking a strong point in supporters loving the team and loving the experience, and turning it on them and turning it off. They are beginning the process, mark my words, they are beginning the process of the Buffalo Bills leaving Buffalo. They're starting already to erode, and they're doing it intentionally, to erode the interest in the Buffalo Bills. You start with getting rid of tailgating. The team sucks, and if it doesn't get any better, that's not going to help. And so whose fault is it? At the end of the day, if I'm right and tailgating impacts on the fan experience, is it true or not that it's about the game and how it's presented more than where it's being played? Because the Bills have had full seats all the time. Do you think if tailgating all of a sudden goes and the numbers start to shrink, do you think maybe that was a bad move on their part, getting rid of tailgating? John, you're next.
Okay. Well, first of all, I have to explain a little bit detail more as to why they put the law in. The liability factor that the ownership and the management of the facility and the grounds and the parking lots have had of accidents and liabilities with cars, damages, has gone to the point where the insurance won't be covering them anymore, okay? That's the filtered explanation what the people are getting, all right? So that's what I've heard from a friend who goes to he lives in Niagara Falls, Canada side, but he goes to the Bills games, and there have been fights. The cops there are not going to stop you from tailgating, but what they don't want, and they're saying it, they can't see any more open liquor, okay? And that's the whole enjoyment for half these people, is to have open liquor, and but they just are trying to tone it down. They're not going to stop them, guys, but the law is there where they can enforce it now. If judgment calls is, those guys, I can see too many cans, they're throwing them all around, we're going to bust them. And now we have the right to. Before, it was a fine line. They were hired as private property security, and
there
the liabilities are too far and too high.
Okay, John,
so,
you made your point. I have to leave it there, and I have to give you this is the end of this segment. I got another part of the show that starts, was supposed to have started a minute ago. So,
nice,
Mike,
fella.
You want to conclude your contribution to this discussion?
Yeah, I just want to end it with this. The whole BMO field thing, that's not going to count as a new stadium, Frank. That's just going to make people think the Argos are playing at the TFC soccer stadium. And the way that's going to be is there's still going to be all those red seats, and that's just going to reinforce that idea. So
that's
not going to be considered
time,
a new stadium.
Okay,
that's not going to change
enough.
Anyone's
thank
perception.
You, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you for your comments. And now Jason. Okay, Jason's gone. All right. So now, hang on, guys. I'm gonna make. I got another guest coming in, and we're gonna talk about some other stuff. I want to thank you, Mike Townsend, for joining me tonight. I really appreciate your contributions, and I hope to have you on again. I hope you're willing to be on again with us.
All right. Thank you. I do appreciate it, Frank. Can I say one thing real quick?
Go ahead.
I'd like to give a shout-out to DJ Hall down there in Lakeland for the Lakeland Raiders. He have this Diamond in the Rough program for all you football players that's looking to be seen, looking to get your talents out there. If you want to contact him facebook.com/DJ Hall.
Perfect. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mike from Minnesota, you had your chance. Thank you, sir, for being on the program. I really appreciate your contribution, as you know, every time. And we'll look forward to hearing from you again.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
And John, as usual, Without you, it's not the same. And I know you couldn't resist the temptation just because we started talking Argos and they were starting to get berated a little bit.
I love it. It's all good, Frank. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Okay. So we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with broadcaster Scott Nichols. And give him a call, too, and we'll go to a break. Okay, let's see. Well, it's CFL time here.
1, 2, 3. We're the Argos Cheerleaders, and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
One, two, three.
We're the Argos Cheerleaders, and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
Yay!
Go, Frank. Go, Frank.
Go, Frank.
Go, Frank.
There you go, Frank.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you, sis.
You gotta love the girls. Hey, Argo lifers, Argo fans, the Toronto Argonauts fan cruise is on the horizon. 7-night Eastern Caribbean cruise, February 1st through 8th. Argo fans, do you want to live it up? The ultimate cruise party on the high seas may be just what you need. Join reigning CFL Coach of the Year Scott Milanovic, the Grey Cup winning quarterback Ricky Ray, and members of the 2013 Argos cheerleaders on a 7-night voyage to some of the most exotic destinations in the Caribbean. Join the fun as we kick off the Argos Fan Cruise Week in Miami, Florida, with an action-packed tailgate party, including your newest friends. The party continues on board the Celebrity Reflection with exclusive events throughout the week that will have everyone talking. There is no better way than to spend the week by soaking up the sun, enjoying fine cuisine, hitting up the gym or spa, or simply partying the night away. Get ready to put your game face on and join the fun. For more information on pricing or to book, please call 416-929-1980, 416-929-1980, or toll-free 1-877-510-2751. That's 1-877-510-2751. Book early, because this is one huddle you can be a part of with the Toronto Argonauts. Okay, joining me now is Scott Nichols. Scott, welcome to the program.
Nice to be back, Frank.
Oh, my goodness, we had a big crowd just before you. And sorry I'm a little bit late. It was hard to shut six guys up at once. But I enjoyed every second. I enjoyed every second of it. I really did.
Well, I'm glad to be here. It's nice to be back here. I haven't talked to you since the Riders were 3-0.
That's right, and we were talking about, you know, 9-0, 8-1. Well, it turns out they're 8-1.
Yeah, it's funny though, because now, like, they've had Edmonton, Winnipeg, and now Winnipeg coming up again. But, you know, 7 of the last 8 games that they're going to be playing are against Western Division opponents. So this will definitely be the test here. So it's a lot of people are kind of freaking out about that. Me, I'm not so much. I'm pretty confident.
Isn't really the objective of the team to keep playing well and maintain a level of, you know, efficiency, keep their engine revving at a good rate so that when the playoffs kick in, it's just one little tweak and away you go?
Well, I think that's the goal for any team, really. I think the bottom line is that they are executing at a pretty high level right now. Some people have said, there are some that are saying, you know, they're playing down to the level of their opponents. You know, let's face it, Edmonton is a better football team than their record indicates. Had Nichols not gone down with that injury, you know, prior to the season, you would be looking at a very different Eskimo team, in my opinion.
I agree 100%. I've said all along that they will be the best team in the second half, record-wise. They'll catch a break. But now, that was before the implosion began, and I'm really worried about the reaction by the GM in Edmonton. I think he's overreacting. But then again, who am I to talk? I'm not that close to the situation. How do you feel about the GM stepping in the way he has and basically, I don't know, looking over the coach's shoulder?
I don't think working in an attitude of having to look over your shoulder, big brother is watching, I don't really think that's a really good work environment to work in. You know, Cavis Reed has got to be, you know, checking out other employment opportunities. I mean, but the thing is, too, is like, Well, yeah, but you know, the thing is, too, is, like, you know, the same, I think, culture is existing in Winnipeg right now as well, too. You know, everybody's second-guessing everybody else, but Winnipeg, I think, is a lost cause, you know, for this season. And I've heard rumors, too, that with Ottawa rejoining the league, that Winnipeg is not that keen on rejoining the Western Division. And it's kind of like, well, you look at the teams in the West, and you look at Winnipeg is playing. It's not really a surprise, is it?
No, not at all. They don't want to keep Edmonton company.
Mm-mm. No, definitely not. But the thing is, too, is like I just want to get this out of the way here. Justin Gould, good kid. You know, he may have a bright future, but you don't start showboating in your third career start like you did after those touchdowns there. And that came back, you know, like I've said, you know, karma's a, you know, that word. But
a strange bedfellow.
but it came back to bite him, because after he started showboating, well, he threw two picks, and that was pretty much the game right there.
Yeah, you know, I think what we're talking about on all these subjects, there's a level of professionalism that needs to exist for success. And professionalism between a general manager and a coach is a conversation that they don't share with the players or the media. Unfortunately, that's happened. That's a bad thing. You've got Winnipeg. You talk about Winnipeg bringing in a new quarterback. I don't have a problem with them bringing that quarterback in. He's a great quarterback. But they're talking about putting him in a week later? Are you not trying to fail, it seems?
You know, that's kind of a tough one to go with. I mean, the fact that Ed Hervey was so outspoken and like, especially with Simone Rodier, I mean,
holy crap!
Like, what is going on there? You know, if I'm a player and I hear my general manager calling me out in public like that, never saying, you know, I don't care if he ever plays another down, I'm kind of going, what is going on here? Where's the team? Where's the together? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and it's unprofessional, because he's reaching down past his employees, his supervisor's authority, and that's not good. He's hurting everybody with that action. Kavis Reed could have gone in the locker room, and he could have closed the door and did what he did publicly, did it privately, and made his point. He didn't need to do it publicly.
But on the other hand, Kavis Reed also did the "There Will Be Consequences" speech. You remember that one? That was played on, you know, highlight shows everywhere. And I didn't really see a whole bunch of consequences. Did you?
No. But you see, the trouble is he's talking before he has a plan, and that's not a good thing.
No, never a good thing. I mean, like, the fact of the matter is when you're trying to rally a team from the depths, and, you know, this is the CFL. Anything can happen. Like, a team can catch on fire in the second half of the season, and, you know, all of a sudden, boom, they're in the Grey Cup final. But, I mean, simply for the fact that, you know, wow, I'm still thunderstruck over Ed Hervey's comments. It's just kind of a shocking thing for me. It's just to so publicly call out, you know, specific members. It's one thing to call out the offensive line. It's one thing to call out the offense or the defense. But to specifically name a player, wow.
That's poison. That's poison in the dressing room, because, in my opinion. But, you know, what do I know? I haven't been on a CFL team and haven't been there to see what it's like. But I just can't see that it creates a pleasant atmosphere inside the dressing room. It's got to be tough. You know, it's got to be tough for the players. And I think you almost said it, but you didn't quite say it. Where's the loyalty? And does a player deserve the kind of respect and loyalty from a GM, you know, to at least speak to them directly, as opposed through the media? That, you know, it does look like a panic button move. It does look like they're panicking in Edmonton. And, you know, I don't blame them. I got to say this, Scott. It's not hard to believe that they're frustrated. I mean, you said it yourself. This is not a team that should be 1-8. At the very least, they were good for about a 3-5. You know, they were good for a 3-5. They've had some bad luck, and I think the frustration is taking over, and that's because Kavis Reed is a very intense and caring guy. you know, who really wants to succeed. And he has Edmonton, you know, a great CFL town. You know, the pressure of the greatness, you know, of five straight Grey Cups. You know, all that wonderful history. And they're playing like, you know, well, I don't even want to say who they're playing like because every team's had their moments, but not playing very well.
You know, and it's funny because, you know, how many, you look at how many games they've lost by 3 points or less.
Oh.
And, you know, that's one of the things that makes me think, you know, Edmonton is not as bad of a team as you know, the standings indicate. And to me, it's just, it's, you know, if I was an Eskimos fan, I would just be so frustrated right now knowing that we could have been, like you said, you know, 3 wins, 4 wins, maybe even 5 wins. I mean, they had a pretty good chance of knocking off the Riders here a few weeks ago.
Absolutely, for sure. And they were full value for that. And you know, don't make a mistake here. Their quarterback situation right now is better than most in the CFL right now. I mean, look at Toronto, Montreal. I mean, you know, even Calgary, you have to wonder what's going on there. And I think Edmonton is in better shape at the quarterback position than these teams I've just mentioned. So, you know, to throw this kind of anvil, you know, into the mix when the team is actually looking better, and I agree with you 100%, the team has looked really good. I mean, you know, it's what we were talking about before, and it's what I believe, is that you got to get the engine going. You know, unfortunately, they don't have a gear right now, and that gear they don't have is experience. And that's really the biggest problem with Edmonton. It isn't their front line. It's their whole team. They've got a young team, and they need a chance to develop. It's not the time to press the panic button. And as you said, teams can turn it around on a dime. Let's talk about the Alouettes in 3-4 weeks and talk about the Argos in 3-4 weeks. Let's talk about Hamilton in 3-4 weeks. You know, Winnipeg, I don't really think that they may, you never know, like you said. But, you know, there's a lot of changes that can take place in a hurry in the CFL. But this kind of action, it stifles the team and it creates panic and fear. Well, the last thing you want is those players on the field worried about every move they make, because now they're not only just worried about the coach, now they're worried about the GM.
Exactly. You know, and that, to me, that is just kind of a I really can't imagine what that would be like. Like I said, I've never played professional football. You know, I've been in my 46 years on this planet, I've watched an awful lot of CFL, but I just cannot imagine to what it would be like to work and, you know, in that kind of environment. It's just looking over your shoulder all the time. When you shouldn't be looking over your shoulder, you should be looking straight forward at your next, you know, this week's opponent.
And looking back, the only time you should be looking over your shoulder is looking back to what you did that you can correct without red-hot heat to look at, you know,
exactly.
where you can contemplate rather than fear your mistakes. Contemplate what you're doing wrong and a calm and steady hand. You know, that's what's necessary. Okay, I think we've spoken about Edmonton long enough, and we hope the best for Edmonton. I love the city. I love the team. I think they have a great history, and they're one of the reasons why the CFL is such a great league. Saskatchewan playing lights out football, 8-1, full value for their 8-1 record. We got a couple of teams in the West that I'd like to talk about. What's your opinion of BC? BC has been a win one week, lose the next, win, lose, win. They've been the epic, what the kids would say today, you know, inconsistent team.
You know, BC is kind of an odd duck for me this year. And, you know, usually for a Wally Buono team, you know, consistency has always been a hallmark of a Buono team. Like even when it comes to his front office moves, like or his coaching, you know, moves, he'll stick with a coach, he'll stick with a player, he'll stick with it. And BC is really going to come on. And I'm as a Rider fan, I'm somewhat worried about BC and what, because Saskatchewan is going to be playing him a few times down the stretch here, and BC is definitely going to be a formidable opponent for sure.
Yes, they will be. They'll be a team to worry about. You think they'll sort out their problems in the secondary, or do they have problems in the secondary?
I think a lot of those problems are really kind of overstated. I think that it's just one of those things where they just have to just kind of settle down and play football, you know, and just go back to the fundamentals. And I know that's such a cliched thing, but they just have to go back to the fundamentals. And I think, you know, everything will settle out for BC, and they were definitely going to be a force coming down the stretch here.
From a distance, the other team owned by the same owner, oh, well, actually doesn't own the team, the Argos, from a distant perspective, help me understand what it looks like to you that's going on in Toronto.
As far as Brayley?
The team. Yeah. Well, I just meant the team. Only because we talked about BC, and now it only is, you know, a great idea in my mind now to talk about Toronto. The Toronto Argonauts. From your perspective in Saskatchewan, what do you see from a distance from that team?
They, you know, they're a team that is definitely they've taken over as the lead team in the East division, but I was kind of hoping for not so much of a drop off from Ricky Ray. Like I realize, you know, he's gone for a long time, and that's definitely going to hurt the club. But I thought Zach Caleros was going to show a little bit more poise, a little bit more, have it together a little bit more, you know, in that game. But he just looked like a, you know, he is a raw rookie, but I expected more from him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Especially after the great way he handled BC. You know, you'd almost think that he played way over his head that day. By what we've seen in the last half of the previous game and last night.
Yeah, he just I don't know what it was. He just kind of looked a little bit unsettled last night. He didn't really have the poise that he showed when, you know, they played BC and kind of took it to him, right?
Yes, and you know, do you think if did you watch the game with the Argos in Montreal at all?
I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I did watch the highlights, the 9-minute package that's online there.
Oh, okay.
So it's a little bit more than just your you know, 1-minute highlight package that you generally get on the network.
Well, I'll try and help you to understand what happened, and I'll give you my opinion, and you tell me if the highlight package showed it. It's less about what it showed, more about what you didn't see. You didn't see the elusive Caleros avoiding, onrushing defenders, making those sidestep moves and getting away from them and making passes. What you saw last night was him getting tackled and not being elusive at all, or not moving inside the pocket and then outside to make a pass. And you didn't see a team make receptions of passes that may or may not have been that good. What did you see in the highlights?
Sorry, Frank, you kind of dropped out on my end there for about a good 10 seconds there, so I kind of missed what you were setting up there.
Oh, okay. What I was saying was that, you know, he had a drop. He was getting out of the pocket against BC, and he was able to make passes, some of them questionable, and the receivers received them. That didn't happen last night. When he did do it, the receivers didn't catch the ball. And, you know, did you see that in that missing from the highlight package, his evasiveness?
Yeah, that was one thing that I did kind of notice too. Is he didn't have that escapability that he showed earlier on in the season, you know, in relief of Ricky Ray. So I definitely think that was kind of a problem, you know. But do you pin that on the O line?
Oh, I that's what I was going to ask you. Is that a rhetorical question? One that you can answer?
Well, you know, I think it's a little bit. I mean, like, once a defender gets past the O-line, it's up to the quarterback to escape the pressure. But, I mean, like, when it's constantly happening and you know, he's trying to make his reads downfield, yet still he's scrambling for his life, you know, there's only so much that a guy can do, right?
Yeah. And you know what? Let's be honest. The other thing is motivation, you know. The biggest part in sport is motivation, you know, or demotivation, whichever you want to use. Montreal has been a very motivated team the past couple of weeks. They developed a lot of confidence in winning that last second game against, again, BC, you know, kicking that field goal with no time left. They've become a confident team. They really were when Jim Popp took over. He made the right move. He got rid of a coach. At least it looks like the right move today, which is great for us because, you know, hindsight is 20/20. And you know, it looks like the smart move on his part, doesn't it?
Sorry, Frank, you dropped out again there. I didn't hear your question.
I got to do something with this sound problem I have. maybe I should type it in or talk slower. thank you for letting me know, by the way. You know, Montreal won that last-minute game against BC. They've had a lot of confidence built up. Jim Popp made a change in coaching. That change looks to be like a good one right now, doesn't it?
It does, too. I mean, the you know, the only thing that I'm really sad about here is the fact that, Marsh is looking pretty good. I mean, like, for a rookie quarterback, but to have him step into the cleats of Anthony Calvillo, you know, who I think, in my opinion, we saw the last play that Anthony Calvillo was going to make in the CFL at Mosaic Stadium a couple weeks ago. But for have him to try to step into an Anthony Calvillo-designed offense, you know, wow, that's pretty big shoes to fill.
Mighty big. But then again, if they have, and you know, I don't know if that's what you're alluding to, but it doesn't seem as though last night Collaros was working within a framework that allowed him to do his thing. I think that's what you're alluding to a little bit, and I'm inclined to agree. You know, they weren't playing to his strengths.
No, and that's one thing that, you know, definitely an offensive coordinator and a head coach really has to, you know, examine. And even though it's a different quarterback, a different, you know, a different style of player, that's one thing that they really have to take a look at and design the offense to play to the strengths of the players. You know, I mean, like, so many teams will do the, well, you know, so-and-so was a pocket passer, so let's make this other quarterback a pocket passer. Well, that's not playing to his strengths, right? So the problem with that is it's tough for the player that's trying to come into the situation, yet you can't really redesign the offense just for the fact of one player. Because then all of a sudden everybody has got to relearn a new playbook halfway through the season, and all of a sudden it's kind of like nobody's on the same page.
Absolutely no one. Well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about on the CFL? Because I know we got to get to the subject that you like the most, and that is the Leafs.
Riders, Leafs, yeah, you name it. I'll talk about it. The one thing that I will say, too, is that I'm very glad to see Mike McCullough coming back off the 9-game. You know, this guy is a 11-year pro, never really had a starting position, and the one thing that I, you know, there was in that Grey Cup loss, now I can't remember who wrote the article, but when they were coming up the Grey Cup loss, somebody said, one of the players in the Riders said, "This is the worst day of my life." And Mike McCullough, who had lost his son earlier in the year, just kind of calmly went over and said, "If losing a football game is the worst day of your life, you've had a pretty good life." And Mike McCullough is one of the unsung heroes, as far as I'm concerned, for the Riders. He's been a class act, you know, for the entire 11 years he's played. He's very entertaining. He's engaging in interviews. And, you know, for the things that this guy has gone through, and, you know, to have him coming back onto the team and to provide that veteran leadership, I think it's going to be an absolutely fantastic thing for the Riders. I'm so looking forward to him contributing again in the second half.
And you know what? The Riders, just what the Riders need, more help.
What's that?
It's just what the Riders need, more help.
Well, you know what? As a Rider fan, I am not going to complain about, you know, what's been going on here for the first half of the season. And also too with the signing of Chris Garrett, because there was a few people in Rider Town that were kind of upset to see Corey Sheets finishing out the game on Sunday, you know, when it was in the bag, and I'm kind of like, well, that's what the function of your running back is to finish out a game, but they kind of think he's a little too valuable to risk injury to.
Yeah, but we all know. It's not a sports cliche, but it is an axiom a little bit, and that is that once a player lets up, that's when injuries happen. If they're worried about him being injured, they can't get him out of the mindset that he's there to play and play hard and play like he always plays rather than guarded. Once you get that guarded idea in your head, that's dangerous, in my opinion.
Oh, exactly, too. And I've actually talked to, like, I never played professional football. I played hockey. But guys who played football, and especially guys who played running back, they said that as the game goes on, they feel more and more durable as the game goes on. You know, win or lose, they just feel more and more durable. So, you know, never mind the mission 2K, which is to get Corey Sheets 2,000 yards this season. The fact remains that Corey Sheets can still contribute. You know, I mean, like, even if it's garbage time, if you have Drew Willey in a quarterback, you know, he's your starting running back. That is the function of the running back, is to close out the game when you're ahead. You know, you don't need to go to your backup. And the thing is, there's so many people that are just so worried and well, what if he gets hurt? What if he gets hurt? Well, you know what? He could get hurt in practice. He could get hurt in the first 2 minutes of a game. Let him finish the game. That's the job of your starting running back, is to close out the game.
Don't get inside his head.
Exactly.
Don't get inside his head. Now, speaking of getting inside people's heads, how did you enjoy that big finish with the Leafs? We didn't get a chance to talk about that, that big finish last year of the Leafs.
Oh, you know, that was I was actually outside building my fence, and I was listening to the game because I had to get this fence done. And, oh, that was just heartbreaking. As soon as the Bruins scored one and then they scored another, I went, ah, here we go. This is a classic Leafs collapse right now. And I was just heartbroken. And the fact is, you know, like, the people, you know, people have to realize, too, is that the Leafs took the Bruins further than Ottawa, further than the, you know, further than the Rangers.
Yep.
They, you know, it's, the Leafs took them really hard. And a lot of people, you know, still kind of humming and hawing about James Reimer as the starting goalie, especially now with the signing of Bernier over the summer. And it's kind of like, you know, the Leafs wouldn't have gone to Game 7 if it wouldn't have been for Reimer's performance in Game 5, Game 6. That's the bottom line as far as I'm concerned.
Unfortunately, he didn't have a good last few minutes of that game. I know you didn't. You're telling me you didn't see it, but he did allow some atrocious rebounds. So that was a problem for him.
Yeah, that was a problem for him all season long, though. That was the thing, you know, that one of the main criticisms that were nailed at him was he was very, very guilty of giving up the big rebounds. But, you know, you got to realize, you know, he is still pretty young. He's a young goaltender, and he's one of these guys that is vying for the chance to be the next on the elite, you know, list of goaltenders that are coming up through the NHL.
Yeah, I believe this, and I got to say this, and you as a Leaf fan and me as a longtime Leaf observer, the Maple Leaf management doesn't lose by bringing in Bernier. They're trying to create a competition, and if both goalies play really well, they've got some good tradability bait, if you will, down the road.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and but the thing is, you know, like, I do feel for Reimer in the sense that that he's always had that competition. The first 2 years he was in, he was always going up against Gustafson. That was the big, you know, the big competition. And then he faced a little bit of a challenge from Ben Scrivens, but you know, and now they bring in Bernier, and it's kind of like he's going, well, is this ever going to end? I mean, am I ever going to be the number one guy here? Well, James, you're on the cusp of being the number one guy, but I think that the Leafs brain trust wants to challenge you to see if you are indeed going to be the number one guy.
And they're doing the right thing, in my opinion. I don't see a problem with that move. I don't know how you feel about it.
I've been a big James Reimer fan since he came into the league, and just the way he was lighting it up, and there again, the common criticism, the big rebounds. Yet that's something that's addressable. So I'm really interested to see how this training camp is going to play out.
Oh, it's going to be interesting, and the controversy is going to be interesting. to say the least.
Well,
now,
especially
Leafs,
in Leafs land where everything is examined under a microscope, you know, one guy makes one slight little play, and in the goldfish bowl that is the Toronto sports hockey scene, it's going to be a killer.
Isn't that the biggest problem with re-signing players in Toronto, even though they always, after they sign, they say, well, he gave them a home team discount? I really don't think they get a home team discount, because I think it's really hard for them, politically speaking, because players there are so adored. You look at Kadri, the kind of season he had, and really we're talking about a less than half a season, and he didn't start that half a season with the Leafs. He had a good run, but it seemed to me the defense has caught up to him after, you know, his initial success. What do you think?
I agree. Once they saw some tape on him, and I just found to be, and I know there's a, I have Leaf fans, friends of mine that just consider this blasphemy to say, but I just don't think Kadri's the real deal. I'm still not convinced. He's so streaky and so hot and cold, and he'll play brilliantly all game, but make one dumb move that sets up the game-winning goal for the other team. And that's the thing that really frustrates me about him. And that's one of the reasons I really don't think, between him and Cody Franson, that they have to sign. I really don't think Kadri is going to be in blue and white this year.
And if he does, it'll only be for the beginning of the year, not the end. I'm inclined to agree with you if he insists on – and then when you read in the fishbowl that is Toronto, and you read the media stuff where they're comparing him with the Norris Trophy winner for contract. I go, what? Are you serious? I mean, even the Norris Trophy winner is signed a bridge contract. I mean, give me a break.
Well, you know, the thing I want to say to him is, okay, look, you're a good player. You're not a great player. You are a good player. Do you expect $5 million a year like you're asking for? I don't know about that.
No. I figure the best deal for him and for the Leafs, if they want to stay together, is probably, I don't want to put numbers on it, but I'm going to anyway, maybe 2 years at $2 million. And then revisit the issue.
Or even like a one-year contract like P.K. Subban signed.
Exactly.
You know, okay, well, you got one more year to prove yourself.
Right. And P.K. Subban has a lot less to prove.
Mm-hmm. I agree entirely.
He won the Norris Trophy. I mean, give me a break. And, you know, this is unfortunately, I call it the Toronto disease and the fishbowl disease, where you get a guy, a great player like Grabowski, who I have nothing against. He is what he is. You know, he's a great player, a wonderful tool on the team. But at $5 million? No. $5.5 million they were paying him? He was never worth that amount of money. Not, I don't know what planet they thought that he was worth that kind of money.
Was that a JFJ contract?
Grabowski.
Yeah. Was that a John Ferguson Jr. contract that he signed there?
No, that was with Burke.
Mm.
That was a Burke contract. You know, I mean, him paying that guy. Listen, the kid's a good player. He's a guy, a great. He's nothing more than a second line center, if you know. Or a third-line center. He's an energy guy, you know, great. You know, but energy guys don't make $5-6 million, you know?
No, for sure. I mean, you know, and I don't know who's been really pumping his tires to think that he expects or deserves $5 million a year. No, I don't think so, Nazem. You just haven't shown that consistency. You haven't shown that tenacity. You've been kind of up and down and up and down and up and down, and I'm just sorry, bud. You know, you're just not quite there yet.
And stick to your guns, Toronto, and love the kid again. Love this kid, great player. He's right now. They've got him penciled in as a number one center. Yet they give Bozak some number one center money. You know, and how can you pay two guys number one center salary?
See, and that's the problem there, too. I mean, like, I think Bozak has been a little more consistent. He hasn't been as streaky. He hasn't been – his highs haven't been as high as Kadri's highs, but his lows haven't been as low. So I think for a guy who's just going to be consistent, you know, going to give you the 80-game or 82-game, you know, throughout the season, I think Bozak is probably your better bet as your number one guy.
In a Randy Carlyle coach team that dedicates itself to defense and being tough and consistent, yeah, absolutely. You know, that. And but I think Randy's tied himself to Bozak with that deal. And, you know, hopefully Randy Carlyle can get this team to play the way they can. They showed, like you said, they played great against Boston, and they took Boston further than, you know, except for the Stanley Cup final. They did a better job than any of the other teams that Boston ran into. So, you know, they do have a reason to be confident. Well, you know, that's one guy. Then there's the talk about Phaneuf. Do you think he's going to be with the Leafs this year, the whole year?
Boy, that's a tough one. You know, I honestly don't even think Phaneuf is going to make the Canadian Olympic team. You know, is that kind of a portent of things to come? I think Phaneuf is a good player. I don't think he's a great player. And I'm just kind of questioning whether or not he can give the leadership that that this team really needs moving on into this season.
Well, if you trust Don Cherry and Don Cherry's view on hockey, he points to the incident between Phaneuf and now I forgot his name. Tough guy for Boston. BC kid. Lucic.
Right.
In behind the net, and they say that, you know, Phaneuf basically inspired Lucic into hitting a different gear, and that was the end of it for the Leafs. I just happen to think that that Phaneuf sometimes doesn't do the brightest thing. You know, he makes some really bad mistakes, and I don't know that a leader can make those kinds of mistakes. That's my question.
You know, I agree. There was that one brain fart there where he pinched in what was that, game 4 or game 5 that cost
yep.
the Leafs. And it was just kind of – but to his credit, he did own it.
Yep.
He did say, this was my bad, this was my fault, this was the reason – my mistake was the reason we lost this playoff game. I do give him credit for that. However, that being said, for the fact that he – did make that brain fart, that's really not the kind of player that you really want leading this team, right?
Well, no. Let's be honest. Today's era of hockey, it's not about how old and how experienced the player is to make him captain. It's how consistent they are. If you look around the league, the best captains are the ones that get the best ink, if you will, or the best reputation. They're not necessarily superstars, but they're very consistent. And that's, I think, what the leadership of a team management wants. They want their captain to be a guy who helps develop consistency. And that to me, isn't the shingle that you can put in front of Dion Phaneuf's game.
No, that's for sure. And, you know, you hit the nail right on the head there. And that's the consistency is the key. You look at all the great captains through history. You know, you look at, Stevie Y. You know, Yzerman was consistent. He didn't have those brain farts. He didn't have those, you know, those game-changing things where something happened that was on his watch where it kind of went sideways. And that's where I really don't see Dion Phaneuf as fitting in as one of those all-time great leaders. And, I mean, as for such a storied franchise as the Maple Leafs, you know, you look back at some of the captains. You look at Sittler. You know, you look at all these guys, and it's kind of like I just don't see Phaneuf as being that guy.
Armstrong, Keon.
Yeah.
How much more consistency do you want?
Well, exactly. You know, and that's, you know, that's where I was genuinely puzzled when the Leafs did name Phaneuf captain. I kind of went, really? Okay, well, we'll try it and see how it goes, but I'm really not that convinced.
Yeah, and you know, he's a great player. There's nothing wrong with Phaneuf as a player for what he is. My problem is they're trying to put him in a position where he really isn't. And as far as I'm concerned, he's overpaid. And when I say overpaid, that discussion has to take place with every player. And for those of us in the media, in quotes, who comment on players, there's nothing more important now than how much a player gets paid. That's a game starter and a game stopper, you know, how much a guy gets paid. Which leads me to my next comment, is we have a lot of really good players who are free agents right now because literally on that topic who have outpriced themselves. Is that a fair statement, Scott?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I was talking with one of the guys from work, and it's kind of like, why did we have this strike? Because we're right back to where we were 2 years ago, where these guys are getting paid these insane amounts of money. And it's kind of like, what did we have this strike? Why did we lose half a season here? I don't really understand what happened here, because we're getting right back into these contracts where these guys are getting paid stupid amounts of money for what? You know, it just boggles the mind sometimes.
Yeah, I actually thought, and I agree with you, the strike I thought was going to temper the term of contracts, which is the big word now, is term. They all want term.
Well, yes, they all want term. I mean, nobody wants another DiPietro insane contract like that was, right? But
right.
It was kind of one of those things where it's kind of like, guys, you know, and even during the off season, we started hearing about some of these signings, like these, you know, third line guys and these fourth line guys getting paid this ridiculous amounts of money. And kind of like, you guys are not, you're good players, but you're not the leaders on your team, but you're getting paid team leader money. And I just don't understand it. It boggles the mind.
Well, you know, they've got the escape clause where they have that moment when they can, you know, eradicate mistakes like the Leafs did with Grabowski, you know, like Philadelphia did with Jeepers. I can see him. The plays for Montreal now. The little Frenchman.
I can't remember off the top of my head either.
Oh, geez, I just saw him at the golf tournament yesterday in Montreal, and now I've forgotten his name. It doesn't matter. Played for Buffalo, but anyway, the key is that you've got these players who are making lots of money, and now, you know, the teams are swallowing, you know, those contracts to do the same thing. That's the part that I see ironic, is that, you know, there's like the Leafs are getting rid of a Grabowski contract, and I think Boland's a great player. You know, I think Clarkson's a great player, but do they deserve the kind of money they're getting? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just see them just basically, you know, moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic.
Yeah, you know, I think that's what it is, for sure. I mean, you know, it's kind of we're kind of in a really tough time with this league. I mean, we just did come out of this strike for, you know, the cost us half a season and everything, and yet we're still finding these really strange, bizarre, you know, insane amounts of money contracts. And I'm probably like you. I'm just kind of struggling to see, you know, where the value is in, you know, some of these players who are getting some of these very bizarre amounts of money for, you know, a role player. I mean, like, if you're going to be a steady, you know, 40 goal a season guy, then yeah, sure, I get that. But if you're going to be a role player, if you're going to be a special teams, you know, if you're going to be a penalty kill guy, why are you getting, you know, $8 million a year? I just don't get that.
Neither do I. Goring would have been a multi millionaire if he played now.
Sorry, you dropped out there?
Butch Goring would probably be the highest paid player in the league right now if he was playing. You know, he had
Him and Ken Linsman.
Yes. They would be making a fortune today.
Yeah.
Hey, can we talk about some other sports on the subject of great Canadians? We're having a nice run of, you know, let's talk. Do you know anything about tennis? Are you interested in tennis? Anyway, Raonic, Do you like what he's doing? Is it refreshing to see a Canadian, on the women's side as well? But for now, Raonic, the job that he's doing, he went as far as he's ever been at the U.S. Open. He lost in his last match, but he really, he did a great job, didn't he?
And actually, Raonic is actually one of the reasons I'm starting to actually watch tennis, because to me, tennis is like watching paint dry. It's boring as hell. But it's funny how when you get those moments where you have a Canadian who's all of a sudden doing well, and it'll pique the average sports fan or even the non-sports fan to actually kind of go, wait a minute, Canada's doing well at something? Hold on, let's pay attention to this.
Just like Mike Weir when wasn't it the U.S. Open that he won in Georgia? When that happened, that really, the Canadian flag really rose, and my kids, who are not sports fans at all, I have daughters, they were telling me about Mike Weir and going, there's a Canadian, he's winning the U.S. Open, it does pique our interest, doesn't it?
Well, especially, too, like in Saskatchewan here, everybody's talking about Graham Dillette when you start talking about, the PGA and how well he's doing. And, of course, here in Saskatchewan, we've known about Graham for years, but all of a sudden to see the fact that he's doing so well on the international stage is a really good thing. And it kind of makes people – we even had a premier, Brad Wall, talking about how Saskatchewan athletes are doing so well. You look at Albers, right, in Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He was doing quite well there, for a while. And, it's kind of like all of a sudden – you have a little moment here in Saskatchewan to wave the Saskatchewan flag, but even more so the Canadian flag, because here we have a Canadian doing well in what has traditionally been an American or international dominated sport. So to have, Graham Dillette playing quite well in the PGA, I mean, this is a good thing for Canada, especially, Raonic too. I mean, like, that's just, that, like I said, it's actually made me want to tune into the tennis highlights to see how he's done.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you get the case of Justin Morneau being traded to the Pittsburgh Pirates. And this is my opportunity to throw a gut shot at the Blue Jays, where this great Canadian baseball player is going to a team that on a shoestring budget is having a little bit more success than the Blue Jays. Did I drop off on you again?
You did. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm just talking about Justin Morneau being traded from Minnesota to Pittsburgh, a team that's run on a shoestring budget and seems to be having just a little bit more success than the Blue Jays.
Well, here again, I mean, to be honest, I don't really follow baseball too closely. I followed the epic collapse from the beginning of the season where the Jays were going to dominate and compete for the World Series, and here we are now where they're actually, now that it's too late, they're playing some of the best baseball of the season. But
when it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah. But, it's one of those things, too. It's one of those little you get the chance to wave the Canadian flag, when you see Justin Morneau and, Pittsburgh, playing quite well, of course, this year and, bound for the playoffs as last time I checked anyway. And to have Justin Morneau part of that, absolutely.
Yeah, and it is another great Canadian. And now we've got Diane Nyad. I started the program today talking about her, and I loved her. Her three things that mattered. She's an awesome. Here, let me play that, and then I'll have your comments because, like us, she's not very young. After four failed attempts, 64-year-old Canadian endurance swimmer Diane Nyad is the first to swim across the 160-kilometer Florida Strait from Cuba to Florida in just 53 hours without a shark tank. Right after reaching the shore of Key West, this is what our hero Diane Nyad had to say, swollen lips and all.
I got three messages. One is we should never, ever give up. It looks like a solitary sport, but it's a team.
Now, that's awesome commentary. This is a woman who really, all three of those things are very imperative in her life. She's lived that part of her life. She's 64 years old, and I got to tell you, I am truly amazed. How amazed are you in her, in this story?
You know, this is something that, you know, especially for her to struggle through and, you know, with the repeated attempts that, you know, that she's had to do. But, you know, this is... I have enough trouble swimming out to the outer, to the dock, out of the lake, you know what I mean? Never mind swim from Cuba to Florida. And to have her, you know, do this is kind of like, not only is it a real testament to the triumph of the human spirit, to use a terrible sports cliche, but for her to do it at her age as well, you know, it's just something that's absolutely phenomenal.
It is totally, you know, I admire this lady so much. And to look at the beaten, like, you know, it's funny, but to see her in such terrible shape, coming out of the water, looking so unhealthy, her lips giant size, she could see that she was having a hard time even thinking. And to know that she did what she did, And used that much of herself to accomplish it, it really is. And you know, it's not a bad thing to say in this case. I think that's a cliche. Her spirit surpassed so much to achieve that goal. And it makes me very proud to be Canadian. I'm very proud to know that she accomplished that. It's been a really good week for us Canadian sports fans, really.
Oh, it has been. I mean, like, I don't know if you've noticed, but there's just more and more and more of these Canadian success stories coming out through the sporting world as of late. And, you know, the fact that, you know, Diane Nyad, I mean, you know, she did something at 64 that I could not do at 22, you know, and to me, that's just simply amazing.
I am so proud of her. Another good news for Canadians, Angus Glenn is going to be the host of the Pan Am Games Golf in 2015. It's less about the place, more about the talk about gold medal and being played in Canada. We don't, you know, again, I'm sort of tripping back, I guess, to BC and the Olympics. It's great to know that such important events are taking place in Canada, because the more that take place here, the more it excites the possible future players that will be competing for that championship. It's a great cornerstone for success in Canada, don't you think?
Well, I would agree. You did kind of drop out there a little bit there as well. But I remember the big hype around the Commonwealth Games in Edmonton back in the late 70s there. And the fact that we hosted the Commonwealth Games. And we had a respectable, you know, showing for the size that we were. But the fact that Canada on the sporting stage, the world sporting stage, is growing greater and greater and greater every single year. Whether it be Justin Morneau, whether it be Albers, whether it be the World Juniors, you know, whatever the case is, the fact that, we, you know, in sports is, well, not so much the World Juniors, but in sports that we traditionally didn't excel, you know, and like for me, one of the proudest Canadian moments is still Steve Nash, you know, all he's
yes.
accomplished as a Canadian.
What a beautiful segue. You know, you just read my mind. I was just going to talk about Canadian basketball. All this hype about, you know, it's too early to talk about this team because we've got a couple of players on the horizon that are going to be a part of this team. You know, this year's NBA draft, first round draft pick, and next year's, they're talking, another Canadian to be drafted first overall, quite possible. And they're talking about, you know, relax, you know, this team isn't ready to challenge. You talked about Nash. He's involved in putting this team together. And they've had a pretty good showing in the basketball tournaments taking place right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and basketball, I think it's in no small part to the fact of the expansion through Vancouver for however short it was before they moved to Memphis and the Raptors. And it just kind of grown the whole, I don't want to say specter, but it's just grown the whole view
the
of
appetite, at the appetite
yeah.
at the very least.
Yeah. You know, and it's just the fact that, you know, there's Canadian kids that are good at basketball going, you know what, maybe I am good enough to play in the NBA, so why don't I try? I'm going to tell you a quick story here. When I was on the road, I played as a musician on the road in the 90s, and one of the bands I played with, the drummer, Chris Shriek, he played for University of Victoria, and he remembers Stevie Nash going, you know, I'm going to play in the NBA someday, boys. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, sure, Steve. You know, you're going to play in the NBA. You know, that was kind of like a pipe dream. And Steve is going, no, I'm going to play in the NBA someday. And look, not only did he play, he excelled.
Huh. He sure did. And on that note, Scott, thank you for joining me today. I look forward to us talking again in the ensuing months.
Absolutely. Glad to do it, Frank. Anytime you need me, I'm always here for you.
I hear you, Scott, and thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise.
Okay, that concludes another Candid Frank Live. We've got no time left. We used it all up. Hope to see you again next time, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, Candid Frank Live on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you around the next time.